Thank you for joining us at the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Please note this podcast does not intend to offer medical advice or therapeutic treatment for any medical condition for either yourself or others. If you have any medical or rehabilitation concerns for yourself or your child, please contact your physician. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the OT Corner with Mrs. K., a school-based occupational therapist bringing you a series of interviews and information on childhood development for kids with all different abilities. So get ready, get set, let's go.
Hello, and welcome to the OT Corner with Mrs. K. I can't believe it, but this is my last episode of my very first season of this podcast. And I can't tell you how excited I am to have completed my first season. And I can't tell you how excited I am planning the next season. I have also have had so many people give me some positive feedback. And it has really just encouraged me to keep on going and doing this. I'm having a lot of fun. Not only that, I've been doing things on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and just recently TikTok. My oldest daughter was the one who recommended I get on TikTok, so I did do that, and actually that's really been very helpful as well in engaging people and bringing them to the OT Corner. But today, my very last episode, I have a wonderful guest. Her name is Melissa Malone, and Melissa is coming on today. I asked her to come on today because when we have children come on for services in the school systems, we do an initial evaluation, and then we also will do, if they are referred to intervention for any type of service, say speech, reading or math, or they may need some an intervention specialist. We end up creating what's called an individual education plan, or the IEP. And it is, the whole process is quite lengthy, and there's a lot of thought and testing that goes into the initial evaluation and then developing the IEP. So I brought Melissa on today because I wanted her, she's the special ed director at one of the schools that I work at, and she's also the principal at the elementary school in that district. So she has a really great knowledge base on how this all works, and does a lot of work with coordinating with all of the special, intervention specialists and all of the related services and the families, and getting outside services in when needed for our families. And so today she's going to come on, and we're going to talk a little bit about how this referral process happens, how we develop the individual education plan for our kiddos, and how this looks at, especially in the preschool level. Melissa was actually born and raised in a suburb of Baltimore, Maryland. She's from the East Coast, and her undergraduate degree is from Townsend University, where she studied fine arts in dance performance and education. Her love of education actually brought her to leave the private sector in 1997, and she began a career in the public schools, initially substitute teaching and then segueing into a long-term substitute position in special education. She ended up pursuing higher education with a concentration in special education and received a master's in leadership and teaching in 2002 from Notre Dame College in Maryland. She is a wonderful woman, and she has ended up here out in Ohio, and she works in Windham, serving the district as the principal, like I said, and of the elementary school, and as the the director of special education for the district. She is a mom of four, loves animals. In fact, she has been training her dog to become, his name is Murphy, and he is going to be one of our therapy dogs at the school. She also enjoys reading, teaching dance, and of course, staying active. She's a wonderful woman, and I'm so happy to have her here today. Please welcome Melissa Malone.
Hello, Melissa. How are you? Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello, Jen. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm flattered, honestly. So.
Well, I'm really appreciative of you coming on because I think what you have to offer this audience is going to be very beneficial and informative. First of all, before we get going, I know that you are the special ed director at a school here in Ohio that I work at. And we work closely together on a lot of cases. And also you are the principal at the KTL Elementary that we work at. How did you end up finding yourself in these positions?
So I have quite an unusual background, and I think it's important that I shared kind of from the beginning, just so people realize, you know, you never really know where your journey or path might lead you. So my undergraduate degree is actually a Bachelor in Fine Arts in Dance Performance and Education. And I just always had a love and a passion for teaching. I was fortunate enough to carry that over into my college career. Coupled with that, in my summers and my downtime, I always interned in the private sector. So kind of funny beginning, I was offered and afforded a job there and quickly learned that's not what I wanted to make out of my career. So I went into subbing, found myself many a time in a special ed classroom, and I just kind of fell in love with it. And the offerings to, even though I grew up on the East Coast, and even though you could find jobs within the school system teaching dance, they're few and far between. So I took the opportunity to continue into special education. At that point in my career, the opportunity was presented to me, as well as others, that we could get our master's in leadership and teaching and couple that with an actual special education certification, which led me to my mild moderate intervention specialist degree or certification. And then from there, had the opportunity to move to Ohio, and I knew where we were moving to, that dance was not going to be an opportunity. So I was going to employ that intervention certification again, and happy to do so. Just like I said, always happy to have, to be able to work with kids. I knew at some point that I thought maybe I might want to do special ed director. So I made sure I had an experience in elementary school. So I've worked in elementary as well as middle school, as well as the high schools as an intervention specialist. From there, I did decide that I wanted to have my administration licensure. At some point from there, I was assistant principal and then a principal, and then colleague reached out to me and offered me this opportunity at Wyndham, which is a very small district. So they were looking to combine services. And I was very upfront. I thought I had enough of a knowledge base in special ed to assist them. And I also knew, I think one of my strengths is just knowing my limitations as well. And that if there's something that I don't know, I'm very happy to reach out, whether it's people resources or literature, whatever I need to do to become more versed to help the district make, you know, the appropriate decision. So, I like challenges. So I thought it was going to be an opportunity to grow and be uncomfortable. And I took on the challenge, and I'm happy to do so. So that's my journey and how I ended up where I am. And I love it.
Today, what I really wanted to get into is at the preschool level, when kids are identified, you know, a lot of times we have kids that come into preschool that have not had, you know, any sort of experience, maybe not even daycare. How do you generally overall do you think most of our referrals for services come about?
So when our kids come into preschool, we do usually just a quick screener on them. And then one of the things that we've even talked about recently, if kids through that screener, if we have some question marks of maybe revisiting them and doing maybe a little bit of more intense screener with them, whether it's a lot of times at that age, it might be just the speech and language and what we need to do maybe a little bit more immediately. with those kiddos that come off of, we're not, you know, not sure some things and that came up in screeners. So that's one avenue. And then once they're in the classroom and working with our preschool teachers, there's always assessments that they're doing along the way. And just obviously teacher observation of what's going on in the classroom too. So once, you know, we put them through at times, if we're still not sure, a lot of times what we do, which should be the process anyway, is put them through interventions. If there's something happening with speech, a lot of times our speech path will jump in, do X amount of weeks with them of an intervention to see if any progress has been made. And, you know, we rely on our preschool teachers, also an intervention specialist, and she might implement some things as well. And we progress monitor along the way to see what happens from there.
And those are the three level, like those go along with the tier one, tier two, yep, tier three level. Can you explain, yep, a little bit what those tiers are? Because I think sometimes, you know, even with the therapist, sometimes, you know, those levels kind of get a little blurred. Like people might not understand exactly what those levels mean.
Right. So our tier one, I always caution that our tier one should really be what our core instruction is for all of the kiddos and how they're responding to instruction, not necessarily intervention at the tier one levels. How are they responding to that core instruction in relation to their other peers in the classroom? And is it in a matter of it's just that specific thing that they're having difficulty with? And then if we provide a quick tier two in intervention where, say the speech path comes in and does a little bit of remediation, or, you know, the preschool teacher gets some information from the OT that might help out to say, hey, try these things along the way. And maybe they just need a little push in that tier two and it helps bring them back up to what is acceptable tier one level, then we're okay. And, you know, and sometimes you might need to visit those tier two interventions periodically, that it, you know, once they have this skill set, maybe they encounter a problem down the line and we need to do a little remediation or intervention with them again. Tier three, a lot of times that's more, we go into more intensive time and exposure and pulling into maybe a smaller group away. So those are some of the parameters that come into place. If we're not seeing gains made, usually with extra time, more exposure, all those things over and over again, then a lot of times that leads us into starting to question if we want to do a more formal evaluation process with our kid.
Now, is there any other way that a preschooler might be identified, say, maybe before they came to preschool?
Yeah, absolutely. So we partner with, it's called Help Me Grow, and they are, you can reach out to them if you feel like your kiddo is having some troubles, and they can provide services. And they have what they develop, if the child qualifies, individual family service plans. And the kids are on those up until the age of three. And then from there, they reach out to the local school district, and it's a transition plan is established to see then if that then might qualify them for an individualized education plan. So that's one avenue, Help Me Grow. We also couple with Head Start, where they supply a quarterly report of some kiddos that might be on our radar as well. And then there's other, those are the only two community-based agencies that we reach out to or reach out to us. That's just kind of dwindled in numbers by population over the course of the time through Portage County. Those have been the only two that have been placed since my time at Wyndham, but I know in prior years that there were, you know, other community-based agencies that would reach out, but those are the two that we primarily work with. So that's another avenue or pathway. And I think as my time has gone, I feel like that number has increased, and I don't know if that's, you know, historically or just, you know, if it comes in waves, but it's, you know, the earlier we get the intervention with the kids, the better. So it's a good thing when we see that those families have been afforded the opportunity to have some services for those kids already.
What is the evaluation process look like, and who gets that all rolling?
Okay. So through Help Me Grow, they have a transition team. They'll reach out to us, a coordinator, and we get things set up. Always right from that start, when we start the evaluation process, our school psychologist comes on board. And she's kind of, to me, the head, the lead of the team. And we'll take a look at the kiddo and see what our concerns are. If there's occupational therapy concerns, if there's physical therapy concerns, if there's a speech and language concern, and those people are contacted and brought in to, you know, be part of the evaluation. And then the whole team, of course, the parents would be part of that team as well. They're crucial. And even though they're not, you know, an expert in one of the fields, they're an expert in their kid and what information they can provide us to help make decisions moving forward.
How long from the initial permission do we have to take to get that whole evaluation process completed?
So once we have consent from the parents that we can move forward with the evaluation, we have 60 calendar days. And that's really important to stress, the calendar days versus school days. And, you know, the government plays a role in that. This is a federal driving, you know, process, and it's 60 calendar days. So that's whether there's, you know, weekends in there, holidays, you get a snow day, it doesn't matter. the clock starts ticking, and you have 60 days to get that evaluation accomplished, at least in the state of Ohio.
And I know that can be nerve-wracking sometimes, yep. Especially in Northeast
just
Ohio.
Just a little bit.
Snow days, and the kid's not there, they're sick or whatever. I've been there. I know that. Yep. And then, so once the evaluation takes place, what happens next? So we set up a meeting and we go through the whole evaluation results, and yes, each discipline makes a recommendation for, like, for me, it's usually fine motor and sensory processing issues. What happens once those issues are identified at that meeting?
So once those results are shared out and everybody's had an opportunity to suggest what could be done for the kiddo in the educational setting, a determination is made if they feel like we should place them on an individual education plan from there. So it's a team decision with the parents involved as well, of the next steps. Once we have all that information and that important piece from the parents, you know, is always the background information and anything, you know, that they can provide from doctors that they've seen as well. So that team at that meeting, it's the decision is made if we should move forward. And then from there, if the decision is yes, that we should place the child on a plan, we have 30 calendar days to devise that IEP, that individualized education plan for the kid. And that team member would be comprised of whatever discipline that the child has qualified for. So maybe they went through the evaluation from the OT standpoint, but they didn't qualify. But they did qualify for speech versus. So the OT would no longer be part of that process. But whoever would remain as far as whatever services there would be receiving. And then the intervention specialist too, that would be what is considered the caseload manager for that child.
Now, what are this is always interesting to me. So say you go through the evaluation process and you as parents don't agree with what has come out of this meeting. What happens what are the rights of the parents at that point? Like what can they do?
They can do a lot of things, actually. And it really depends on what they're agreeing or disagreeing with. I've had very few experiences where the parents really don't want them on an IEP. It's usually more of services that they're surprised that they won't be receiving or not. So the parent can certainly present their side of why they feel like they need services or don't need services. There are other avenues avenues that they can go through, whether it's arbitration or mediation with an outside source. They can reach out to parent advocates. I mean, we certainly try not to get ourselves into like a legal predicament, because it just usually isn't and beneficial for either side. We really want to try to do what's best by the kid. So a lot of times we can come to a compromise of what, you know, we think is best, and listening to what the parents' needs and concerns are as well.
I do hope you're enjoying this episode. I know there's a lot of information that is coming at you, and I'm trying to keep it as brief and as summarized as possible. But the next section, I really did want to ask Melissa about what the difference is between preschool evaluations and elementary school evaluations, because there is a difference.
Preschoolers, it's a lot of play-based evaluation going on and watching them in that preschool setting. You know, and I've learned so much just watching you guys go through the process of evaluating kiddos and what you're looking for. So that's a lot of what happens at the preschool level, just knowing you're really probably not going to elicit a whole lot of information from sitting down doing like a formal, you know, written test, I guess, if that's, you know, what people maybe outside of education are new to this process might envision. So preschoolers, a lot of play-based intervention. And then a thing to keep in mind, if there is a kid on an IEP that's transitioning from preschool to kindergarten, there's a big category that, you know, each kid, when they're identified, they have to fall into a specific category that is, and these categories are given to us by the state. The one category in preschool for preschool age kids does not carry over into kindergarten when they become school age. So if we feel they need the need to continue on as a student identified with special needs, then we have to find a more appropriate school age category for them.
What are those categories? Like how many categories can they fall into when they're transitioning from the preschool? Gosh.
So there's quite a few. I'm trying to think off the top of my head exactly how many there are. One of the broader ones is our SLD category, is their specific learning disability category. There's an autism category. We have other health impaired, major and minor. We don't usually see it in our more of a general typical setting, but kiddos that fall under, if they're deaf and blind, and what, you know, what can be provided for them. So there's a multitude, and then there's autism, if I didn't mention that one already, which, you know, even listening to staff members that have been in the business for a while and having them understand how autism has become really a spectrum, and not as maybe pigeonholed as what they're envisioning what it was. So it's definitely evolved, and I think for the good and for the better, even in my short time in this role. So.
Well, and I think too, like I have a daughter with a disability who was identified early on. She had early intervention. And things have changed since she's been in kindergarten. You know, the transition from preschool to kindergarten is like completely different. Not only that, when we move, I mean, it's different from state to state too, because we moved from Philadelphia, and the process was they had to getting ETRs or evaluations from different states is always interesting, because the information might be presented a little differently, and the IEPs as well.
Absolutely. And we've talked about that before, that I grew up on the East Coast, and just, you know, what I know from how things were done in Maryland to transitioning to here to Ohio. And to me, it's I don't know, not perplexing, but for something that is supposed to be federally driven, and, you know, what, how the different flavor it takes on in different states is interesting to me.
So once the IEP team is formulated, so everybody, we got all of our related services, and we does the school psychologist have anything to do with the individual education plan? Are they on that team, or is it just, you know, who's on the team, basically?
I always welcome our school psychologist to sit in on, you know, the IEPs, especially if it's with a family, if it's their first, you know, first taste of special education and what that means. So they're always welcome. They don't need to be part of the, you know, the actual IEP meeting. They provide the information that drives the IEP for the individuals that are writing it. So if one of the things that we always caution, you know, our teachers, I feel like, always have the best interests of our kiddos at heart. But if they see a deficit, sometimes they want to write a goal for it. But if it's not in that ETR, if it's not in that evaluation, it can't go on that formal. It's not to say that it's not a skill that we can't work on with the kid, but it's not going to appear in that IEP that we write. So all that information that is compiled from the school psych, so she takes all the information from all the disciplines and compiles it into a document. And in each part of that, there's always suggestions and implications for the educational component of that IEP. And it has to be in that ETR or it can't be in that IEP.
Well, and our school psychologist seems to be, it's great to, the thing I love about Wyndham is it's such a small school system. So everybody is, it's super cohesive.
Very and fluid.
It's very fluid. It really is. It's great. And so how long does this IEP last for the
IEP is the IE is valid for 1 year. We always remind parents that that itself is a fluid document. And it's not set. I always say it's not set in stone. Yes, it's set in stone for that period of time. But if there's ever, if we're looking, like I just reminded my staff as we're coming up on what's called progress report monitoring that we send out, at different points throughout the year, just let parents know how their kiddos are doing at working towards a goal. And if we're consistently saying each quarter that they're in school, that they're not making progress, so then to me, that's time to reflect and say, is this goal appropriate? Is this objective appropriate? If we're nowhere near attaining it, then is it because we just haven't gotten to it, which isn't acceptable, or is it above the skill set and that it's not achievable or attainable? And so we need to back things up a little bit. And then on the flip side of that, if they're mastering all their goals, and there's still half a year left, it's not okay to just say, okay, well, we're done and we're good. Then we need to amend the goal the other way as well. So even though it's valid for a year, I always caution that we always need to be reflective throughout that year of what's working, what's not working, and what do we need to do differently.
And then we also, I know for a fact that, you know, I have been brought in to evaluate a student, say we have a student that was moved into the district, or, you know, that's new to us, or maybe, I don't know, when they, I remember a long time ago in Wyndham, actually, we didn't do the initial evaluations. I think Help Me Grow did, or Head Start did, but, you know, say something was missed, or, you know, and it happens. Like you said, a lot of those standardized tests that are for younger kids, a lot of times they come out in the average range. And then like 6 months later, people are like, well, they can't, you know, their fine motor skills are lacking. Right. So, you know, they need to be assessed again. And I know that I have been asked to do assessments and I'm brought in, and then we amend the IEP because I'm brought on. But that does not change my date. Like I still... The IEP ends the year from the initial.
The IEP still ends. And that's one of the things, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's something that I have to remind people that just because you're amending a certain part, we're not rewriting the whole IEP. You know, if you rewrite the whole IEP, then yeah, the date changes. But just being very cautious of that as well, that doesn't extend the IEP. We still have to reconvene as an entire team prior to that year date being up. So it's always a day before at least.
Great. You know, so I have to say thank you so much, because I know that, like I said, being a parent with a kid with a disability and special needs, going through this whole process, and I've said this to you before, you know, my husband's an attorney and he still looks like a deer in headlights when he walks into these meetings. And it's just a lot of information, a lot of pages. Yeah. And I really appreciate you coming on and going through this whole process for my audience. That's awesome. So thank
you. Absolutely.
And then I will probably be asking you maybe to come back in the future, because I'm sure there's going to be other issues and processes, because it does look different. I think as the kids go through the school system, those transition periods from preschool to kindergarten and then middle school to high school and then high school and beyond is always, there's so many different transition periods.
Absolutely. Anytime, anytime.
Thank you so much, Melissa. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
A big thank you to Melissa and all my guests that came on this season, this first season of the OT Corner with Mrs. K. I do hope that the information that I delivered to this audience has been helpful and informational. And as always, I welcome the questions from my audience and people that have been following me on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. Thank you, thank you, thank you. This first season I feel has been successful. And as always, if you have any questions, you can find me at theotcorner.com.
Thank you for listening to the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Feel free to join the OT Corner community by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you have a topic you want to hear about, or if you would like to come on the show, feel free to contact Jennifer at theotcorner.com. We would love to hear from you. All information from the show is listed in the episode notes. We know you can listen to anyone, so we appreciate you stopping by. Until next time, thanks again.